Welcome to The Watching Dead, the officially unofficial podcast for The Walking Dead on AMC. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And tonight we're covering Season 4, Episode 14, entitled The Grove. We were pretty harsh on this one through the instant cast, I think. At least on certain aspects.
That. I deny that.
Okay, well, our audience would not deny it, certainly. But I'm with you. I think we were harsh on certain aspects of it.
Mm-hmm.
We were very, very praising of other aspects.
Sure.
Some of this episode was the absolute best stuff I've seen in Walking Dead, honestly.
Yep.
Clear is another one that we talk about all the time. And this is right up there with it as far as the performances from Melissa McBride and Chad Coleman. I think those are outstanding.
Certainly, we had some of the better directing. We had some of the better performances with those two. We also had about the best way you could tie this plot up into a neat little bow from Scott Gimple.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to go to the spoiler section to hear my detailed thoughts on this, because there's some of my issues with how this goes on. You might not be, might stem from, like I said, on the instant cast, my preference for the way the comic book handled it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think they're ever going to revisit anything like this, but I'm not going to take a risk at someone bitching at me. So I'm going to throw that, my overall problem with the direction the storyline took in the spoiler section.
Okay.
But, honestly, I think it was fine. It was well written. Certainly the last third of the episode was gripping as hell.
Mm-hmm.
But I there's a lot of people that were praising aspects such as the performances of the little girls and the way they were reacting and writing, and I just can't get behind that, man.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you there.
The episode that Lori Grimes died,
uh-huh.
We were all primed for it. We had the Fiesta cast, and then when it came, and we got the burritos and sombreros and the music going, we were kind of bummed,
uh-huh.
Because they wrote her a really good exit.
Yeah, and she did a stellar job performing that part.
And the human drama involved in a mother sacrificing herself to deliver her baby and her son having to put her down to keep her from being a zombie, and Sarah Wayne Callies and Chandler Riggs' performance going for broke was really good.
Oh, yeah.
But Lori Grimes' character was still largely bullshit.
For sure. We did not turn around on that.
That's the thing I think a lot of people don't understand. Like, Carol and Tyrese's reaction to the deaths of these children, which is a compelling thing,
mm-hmm.
is what made the episode.
Yeah.
And the episode could have been astronomically, stratospherically good if the buildup of these characters was more than what it was. If these characters were consistently written from the beginning and mm-hmm. consistently performed in the beginning, and they had better direction, because the two episodes they're in, unfortunately, two rookie directors. The guy that directed this episode is a camera guy. He's a camera operator. He's been a camera operator all his life. He got promoted just this season to second unit director of photography.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's dipping his toes in cinematography, and they're like, hey, we got this really emotionally heavy, complex episode. Let's let the rookie handle it. What the fuck? What the fuck?
All right, maybe you're being a little harsh on the guy, but I didn't think the directing in particular was bad. I mean,
it's not his fault. He didn't make that call.
What do you mean?
Him like, if I was putting my director? Work to do, like... I can't even give a good example. If they brought me in the work to write a fucking operating system in Ruby,
okay,
I would do a shitty ass job.
Because you don't have any of the tools.
And people could say, what fucking idiot wrote this program? It doesn't even work. It doesn't even try to work. It won't even compile. They're right.
Yeah.
But it's not my fault. It's whatever project manager assigned me for that.
Okay.
So it's like,
so it should have been like Scott Gimple in there on this one.
I don't know.
I mean, this is a pivotal episode for sure.
Right. And the fact that it worked as well as it did speaks a lot about the script and a lot about the other performances. And the fact that I think this Michael Stratezimus, camera operator in Super Mario Brothers, the movie, by the way.
Oh, fantastic movie. I love that movie.
Exactly. I think that for a rookie outing, he did a lot of things right, but I'm going to point out some awkward edits that I think are a direct result of not having the kind of footage they need to make good edits.
Okay. I think, so the only part where I really had a problem with the direction was probably with the girls themselves. I think Mika actually on second watch was fine.
She's fine.
Don't have a problem with her.
She's fine. She's not great. She's not terrible. She's fine.
It was the lack of any sort of shades of gray at all in Lizzie's performance. It was, I'm either screaming at the top of my lungs about how you've just murdered my friend, the Walker, or I'm doing nothing.
But there again, a good director.
I understand that. Yeah, that's the complaint I have with the director.
Would sit there and say, whoa, this material.
Sure, but at that point, can you even do that?
And
how long do they have in their shooting schedule, stuff like that?
Look, they shut down for four fucking months in between the first eight episodes and the last eight episodes.
Sure.
They had plenty of time to rework the script. If they didn't, day of a talented
the
director.
The problem wasn't the script, though. It's not that
it was
in this early stage.
Yes, it was. You can't write that script for that talent. You can't. And then if you did,
did they know that, though? Again, they haven't had anything like this for those girls to do yet.
Well, if you're going to play devil's advocate, I mean, I'm just stating my opinion. The second thing is, I think that on the day of, when you see that this isn't working, you pull it back a little.
Yeah.
Don't go like screamo. Mm-hmm. Play more haunted. Play quieter. I think the perfect example, which, by the way, the Charbino, Miss Charbino was also in True Detective. They had a really difficult scene with a girl that was troubled with some very difficult material, and I'm trying desperately not to spoil. And this little girl, when it was time for her to perform, they played her just quiet, scared little girl. Mm-hmm. And then when they needed the heavy reaction of her crying, they pivoted behind her and showed her parents' reaction.
Yeah.
And their parents sold the shit out of the scene, which elevated her performance. There's a lot of tricks you can do to work your way around these problems. They just fucking threw her out there with no safety net, and that sucks.
The other big – I want to get all of this negativity and problems out of the way right away so we can get into the script and talk about what we liked. The only real other problem I had with this episode is – and people will try to defend this, but I don't think there is a character in Lizzie. I think she is just a psychotic, and that is not interesting in any way.
Right, which is a lot of the other, when we get their feedback, a lot of people are like, don't you guys understand she's mentally ill? No, yeah.
No, we don't get why, though. Did the world break her? Did something happen to her in her past? We weren't shown any of that.
Yeah.
And if you want me to understand why she's crazy and maybe empathize with her a little bit, you got to give me some.
And saying a character's crazy cannot wave away every problem that character has. I feel like that statement should be enough. It's fully evident, full stop.
Yeah.
You cannot say, well, I didn't understand this thing about the performance. Well, the character's crazy. Mm-hmm. Well, her motivation in this scene seems to be a lot different than the other scene. Well, you know, her character is crazy. Okay, well, her reaction here seemed a bit, well, it's her character's crazy. You can say that about anything.
Sure, yeah.
She could have fucking whipped out a communicator and beamed up to the Starship Enterprise or gone, you know, and it's like, you know, the character's crazy.
Uh-huh.
So it's like,
that was just in her head. She's crazy.
Yeah, so I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like that blanket response, and it's waving away any problems that might be there with...
But it sucks because I feel like we're already spending way too much time on the negativity because the stuff in the episode that was good was really, really good.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's just a shame. And I get it. There's a lot of people that didn't have a problem with the performance. Great. Great. I'm glad. I did. And I can't not say it, man.
Yeah,
I didn't get to where...
Sure.
We didn't get to where we are by just being like, well, you know, I don't get it, but we'll just sweep that under the rug.
No way. No way. That's not what we're here to do.
So,
you know what we are here to do is do a recap of this freaking episode.
First... A lot of people have been really jealous about Daryl's vest with the wings on it.
Oh, yeah. Me included.
Very cool. We've got a guy, Richard, from ScreenMonsters.com that has made some replicas of those.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to give us a set to give away to you fine folks. And we're going to have a contest at in between, you know, the traditional pimping spot, in between the recap and the feedback, where we'll talk more about that.
So, okay, we'll get there. We'll get there. Let's get right into the recap. Are we also, then, after 10 minutes of talking.
Also, are we going to talk about Walker Stalker Con Chicago?
Not right here. If anything, we're going to drop it in at the very end.
After feedback?
After feedback, before spoilers. Spoilers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just want to get people...
Okay.
They're fast forward material.
Sounds good. All right, so we start off this episode with Lizzie playing tag with the zombie outside. A great, great scene here. Very
awesome.
Intense, very suspenseful, very creepy with
yes.
the music that's playing in the back and the boiling pot of water. You can just see that things are building to something
and the
bad.
Fact that it's, in fact, and the way they did it kind of slow-mo mm-hmm. gave it a very dreamlike quality.
Yeah.
And you first think it's like, okay, this is kind of an idyllic setting. And kind of down homey, and then a girl is running. Oh
uh-huh.
shit, she's running from a zombie. Then oh shit, she's playing fucking tag with that zombie.
Yeah,
that is a fucking phenomenal scene.
The construction of that scene is really, really well done.
Yes, yeah, and again,
and the atmosphere of it is just amazing.
Kudos to Michael Satramzimus. Satrazimus.
I can't see his name, or I'd tell you how to say it.
I don't know that you could. Michael
okay.
Satrazimus. Because that was a really, really sweet shot.
Yep. And then we go to the intro, and then when we come back, Carol and Lizzie are talking about parents and children, I guess, and keeping each other safe while she kind of keeps guard over the rest of the group. Tyrese, who's sleeping in the train tracks. Sleeping on the train tracks.
Oof.
On... Why?
One of the hardest substances known to man, which is a train track. I mean, people use.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Chad Coleman.
Chad Coleman's skull. Clearly, okay. It's the hardest. But
yeah.
A train rail, people use those for like makeshift blacksmith anvils.
Yeah.
They're tough as fucking nails. Why you would pick there to sleep on, but it made a cool. It made a cool shot again. Because that's something you just wouldn't do in this world. You'd fucking get ran over by a train.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about that in the shithole Terminus world.
Not at all.
Did you think... I noticed a urgency in Lizzie to get to Terminus. She seemed to be overly concerned about it. Overly concerned about whether to be kids there.
Sure.
Do you think she had some kind of Mad Pied Piper plot from the beginning?
Pied Piper plot to what, lead the kids away from or turn the kids to her side or like,
well, or to the undead in this case, like she kind of
lead all the kids away to get eaten by zombies.
She'd want to do it with like Lizzie or Mika and Ass Kicker,
Judith, yeah.
Judith.
Uh-huh.
But she's like a little bit too emotionally attached to them. So she kind of, I feel like these are the experiments that are leading up to this terrible thing that she's had planned for maybe a while.
Hmm. Okay.
Although the way this episode shot, it seems like this is something that just comes to her, but I don't,
yeah.
There's several scenes where she's weirdly insistent about, well, we're not staying here, right? We're still going to Terminus and wondering if there's little kids there. I don't know. Maybe she's hoping that there'll be little kids there and she can be less of a freak.
Yeah, maybe.
That's also possible.
I mean, now it's just her and her sister, right? And she left a whole group of kids over at the prison. So maybe she's just eager to get back in with some friends or something. I don't know. Maybe she'd be a little more normal if she was.
nice contrast. First of all, they mentioned Sophie, which has been been a long time since we've heard her. And a lot of parallels that Carol puts up and the episode does between Sophia and Mika in this episode.
Oh, yeah, with her, you know, not having a mean bone in her body or or whatever. And that was what got Sophia killed in the first place. So not looking good for Mika at the beginning of this episode.
Yep.
And then you can really see, like, the bond that has developed between Lizzie and Carol this episode throughout the season. Because she gives her a hug before she goes to sleep, and they're talking very, you know, honestly.
Would you... Would you miss me when you kill me, ma'am?
Yeah. So that's also, you know, foreshadowing for what she has to do later. Then Tyrese,
what do you think about her calling Carol ma'am?
I think it's the next best thing to mom. I think she wanted to call her mom, but Carol had already put the squash on that last few episodes.
It felt, to me, it's interesting you had that because I had the opposite reaction. I thought it was kind of cold.
Huh.
And I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be or not. Like, ma'am.
Well, maybe after she squashed her on mom, she was like, oh, okay, I'll call you ma'am.
That's true. But
I mean, in a cold way, like she backed off completely from mom.
And it made Carol seem more like a governess throughout this episode. And I thought that was a curious decision.
Yeah, that's what she wanted to be back in the prison, right? I mean, she told her not to call me mom. I'm not your mom. I'm just trying to help you survive here. But it doesn't seem like that's a relationship they have now.
Was that to protect Carol or protect the girls? I never really was sure about that.
Probably to protect Carol, I think.
Really?
She may not want to get involved. Yeah.
Hmm.
I mean, she certainly has some guilt, I think, over what happened with Sophia.
Well, I wonder if she did that because she knew she was responsible for the deaths and she knew that might blow up in her face and she was not wanting these girls to, you know, imprint on them as their mother, knowing that she had taken this big risk for the community.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, it just, yeah, I mean, they hugged and all that, but I just thought that every time I heard her say ma'am, I was just like, ah.
All right, let's talk about Tyrese real quick because he's having a nightmare, obviously, and he wakes up and he's staring right at Carol as soon as he opens his eyes.
It's the waking nightmare that everyone has. Oh, my God, I'm on Walking Dead.
Oh, God. Am I on The Wire? No, shit, I'm not. So this is obviously foreshadowing the dreams that he later tells Carol about. This is one of the dreams that he's having about Karen, you know. And we'll talk a little bit more about that when we get there. So then we see Carol using tree sap to treat Tyrese's wounds. And
not sure about the medical efficacy of that, but okay. We'll let the Dr. Carol medicine woman do her thing.
So they talk about Lizzie's confusion about the walkers as well, which, I don't know. All of this stuff at the beginning is set up for all the stuff that plays out later.
But I want to point out here, one of the problems I had, and nothing to do with Miss Charbino's performance.
Mm-hmm.
Mika innocently says, "Yeah, you're not even grossed out by dead rabbits." And Lizzie looks sharply at her, like,
"Oh yeah, the fuck I was you getting say?" That.
Like she's nervous. Yeah. And
I can't believe you would tell them that.
Yeah, like, and keep that in mind later on when she expresses total confusion about why Carol might be mad at her at the end.
Yeah,
like if you're a mentally ill person. And you're a psychopath, you don't have a good handle on empathy.
Yeah.
So this is one of the problems.
So the concept that I could get in trouble for having killed mice
may not occur to her. Yeah. I mean, again, if this was over several episodes, maybe that could be used to illustrate the slide. But she breaks bad in this episode. So that's just one thing that I was like, huh, that's really weird choice.
Yeah. In that scene, they also smell a fire in the background, which we will find out more about later.
Corn mash and redneck. Oh, God.
And privileged farm girl. How about that? Rich farm girl.
Oh, Jesus. Smells like a poncho that reeks of urine and sweat. Oh, my God. What's
and a
going
bag
on?
Full of cash and jewelry.
That has a smell?
Apparently, yeah.
Mm.
So Lizzie plays I Spy with Tyrese, and they spy a walker coming down the tracks. Not a good omen. I mean, this is death walking down the tracks toward them. That's very, very bad.
Walker's saying, I think I can.
But he can't. He falls over. He loses a leg. How did that happen? How did he get stuck there on the ground? Because he's clearly walking down the tracks, right?
Wasn't that like some kind of... I assume... I don't know if you've ever walked on tracks, Jim.
I have not, no.
I have. I grew up next to a fucking pair of train tracks in the woods.
Very worldly.
No, that's the opposite. It's very country. And so what'll happen sometimes is either this is going over, maybe this is kind of like a little bridge. We didn't really get a good look at it. Or sometimes what'll happen is the ground gets washed out because the tracks are kind of built up on a mound.
Uh-huh.
And if that happens, then the weight of the trains can kind of like break these ties. And sometimes a tie will be missing or be cracked. And mm-hmm. you can really easily fall in between there. And like, even if you're an able-bodied person, and that would be bad news if you're zombies, game fucking over.
I didn't even see a leg, though. I thought it was a bloody stump, but it can't be, right?
No, it was like, his leg was just way, it just like shot right down between the ties.
That makes way more sense. Yeah. I really like the music in this. This has kind of become a signature for me in The Walking Dead, is this like this blown out kind of warbly sound that kind of builds behind like violins or something.
I was going to say that I think Bear McCreary has really found the voice for this in the last two episodes, the last two seasons, because he hit these notes, and also at the end he hit the like, you know, solitary piano notes of sadness.
Yeah.
That really added a lot to the scene where, you know, Carol had to put...
Well, I mean, we're going to talk later about the connections between episodes. That was just the sound of Beth playing piano.
Right?
Just kidding. There was also a line here...
That smoke was actually all the candles she lit at that fucking house.
That was before the moonshine fire. There's a line that Lizzie says when Tyrese is about to... you know, put a cap in this walker. She says, sometimes we have to kill them, sometimes we don't. So how does that jive with the idea that Lizzie is insane and Lizzie likes these walkers a lot? Well, we'll put it that way. I mean, she clearly knows that they're dangerous, right?
Right.
Because this one is not, and that means to her that we don't have to kill it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a good handle on what she thinks is dangerous versus not dangerous.
Okay.
Because she clearly thought, like, the walker coming at that she was trying to lure away from Glenn was not dangerous until it was, and she started screaming.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't think that the walker playing tag with her was dangerous at all, to the point that she would stop and turn her back to it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very questionable. I don't understand what her judgment is.
But also, why does she think it's not dangerous? Because she was very close to just letting herself be bit by one. I mean, what is she afraid of? She kills her sister to turn her into a walker. Is she really afraid of these things?
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Why wouldn't she want a walker to be walking around to kill potentially other people if she's okay with becoming a walker herself? But she's not really okay with becoming a walker herself, because she never does it.
Yeah.
She tempts it. She says, maybe I should become a walker, or maybe I should just let it...
Again, I think that it would be interesting to have a child see the walkers as something constant and dependable and strong.
Uh-huh.
Versus the humans that are unreliable, and they let you down, and they abandon you, and they die, and prefer to company of them. But that would be a consistent motivation that you would think would inform all their actions. Here it's like they want their cake and eat it too. They want, you know, to preserve the illusion that this young lady is normal for as long as possible, to get the emotional haymaker on Carol.
Yeah, yeah.
But also have her be weird and crazy and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And I work for a lot of people, but for me that was a hang up for me.
Okay. So in the next scene, Carol tells Mika that she has to toughen up. Unfortunately, Mika doesn't want to, and just as Carol is about to make a good point to her, they stumble upon a house, which Mika takes as proof of her point that everything is going to work out exactly how it's supposed to. Unfortunately for Mika, she has to learn the hard way later on.
Yeah, my mom says everything works the way it's supposed to. Oh, yeah? Well, where is your mommy? How'd things work out for her? Carol missed a golden opportunity to roll tough on... little toe-headed Mika here.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay. On their way back to or into the cabin.
Oh God! I can't wait till we get to the planarium worms. I'm really looking forward to that.
Okay. They go into the cabin, or they're headed toward the cabin, and they see smoke from Daryl and Beth's moonshine house fire, and they apparently think that subsisting entirely on pecans is a viable option.
Hey, man, I fucking love pecans.
Loving pecans and living pecans are two different things.
Candied pecans. You could.
You can't make a pie out of just pecans.
It would be more than a week before I'd start bitching about an all pecan diet. Let's just put it that way.
All right. Until your shits turn runny and brown, runny and green. That'd be disgusting.
But then again, if I was the adult in the situation, I wouldn't give a gun to a 7-year-old and tell him to shoot a fucking deer. I'd just bag it myself and say, you can get the next one, kid.
Yeah. Especially the first deer, right?
So I'd have pecan. I'd have venison and pecan on the side. I think I can make that work for a long time.
Sure. No, I think so. I think so. So Carol and Tyrese go inside the house to clear it, and they leave Mika and Lizzie outside to fend for themselves with baby Judith. And a walker comes out another door.
Lizzie's like, excellent.
A walker comes out another door, and Mika saves both of them.
Hilariously.
And then Lizzie counts the flowers.
You and I are both big fans of the zombie pratfall.
Like, oh,
when the zombie goes towards something at thigh level and just ass over tea kettles.
And that stuntman committed.
That's what we said when we watched it. It's like, Jesus Christ, that stuntman, whatever he's getting paid is not enough. Because he made no effort to protect himself.
No.
Very
that's
convincing.
What I love to see that stuff.
Oh, it's so good.
Because that's the reality of this type of creature.
Yes.
They don't give a shit about pain. They're going to break their neck if they have to get to you.
They're like the honey badger. They eat only way more uncoordinated.
Yep. Yep. You don't know that. Maybe the honey badger is very uncoordinated.
Probably. I know the honey badger gets bit by a snake and... venomous snake and just goes to sleep for a while and then wakes up, goes into a coma, wakes up and finishes killing the snake. I think that's a zombie for you.
So this is probably the first instance, I think, of the acting letting me down in this scene specifically. I think everything up until now was adequate or above. I didn't really appreciate what Lizzie was doing in this scene, honestly.
Okay, so she was frozen with fear until Mika started shooting, and then she started going, no, 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 like she didn't want it to be killed.
Yeah.
So again...
We know that she was just, worried about the walker there in that situation.
Was she?
It's hard to say, because when that walker comes over the fence, she backs off like it's a dangerous thing.
And when she's on the ground, it's coming towards you, she seemed frozen in what I would describe as fear... But then she starts screaming, no, no. If she really thought it was not a danger, it seems like she would grab the baby and get up and walk away. To me, they played that scene, and I don't know whether it was written that or that's a direction, as Lizzie frozen in fear, didn't know what to do.
Yeah, no, I'm with you.
That, to me, doesn't speak to a consistent character motivation, even a crazy one.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know what else to say about it. Carol and Lizzie pack... crack some pecans. Mika finds a doll and Tyrese relaxes in the Lazy Boy. First time Tyrese is relaxed in a while. He really enjoys it. He's out like a light too.
Yep.
This doll that Mika finds is named Griselda Gunderson. Does that have any significance whatsoever? Or is that just a random made up name?
I have no idea.
Okay. I tried to look it up. I didn't find anything.
Well, there you go. So... if Google doesn't know, then who does?
All right. And then Mika suggests that they should live here.
Sure, why not?
All the pecans you can eat.
They seem pretty careless here. They made a big point about how to they're not going to fix the fence because that's how the deer are getting in.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to leave the fence gaping open, but then Carol says, we'll just play it really careful. Flash forward to them sitting before a roaring fire with them walking to and fro in front of windows that aren't barred. They're not even have the drapes closed. Like,
throughout this whole episode, there's a disregard for attracting walkers.
Like I get, like, okay, we can hole up here for a couple days, weeks, or even longer. But, you know, I don't know, man. Carol's a badass, and Tyrese, they want us to think he's a badass, despite all evidence to the contrary.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't they doing a little bit more here? You know, it's like, why are they have a big roaring fire? Just you know, you can crack nuts in darkness.
Okay.
Are you worried about fucking zombies or aren't you?
I at this point, I don't think they are, because in the very next scene, Carol sees Lizzie playing with one, playing tag, and she runs out and kills it. And then Lizzie freaks the fuck out, screaming at the top of her lungs, which didn't like this performance either, but Carol doesn't stop her and say, shh, You're going to attract walkers. Let's go inside or something. She just lets her scream her lungs out for a minute and a half.
Well, and they just had fired gun. They just fired guns several times in the previous scene, which is a dinner bell call to walkers. That I mean, they established that. That was a big concern in season
Huge.
Two.
Huge. Yep.
Justifiably, because it brought a whole fucking horde down on them.
Yep.
And
now they seem to have lost that care. There is no care for
noise
of any kind.
I mean, they don't know that there's over 10,000 CGI-generated walkers, you know, a stone's throw away from them. Uh-huh. But still, they have this... People that have survived as long in this world should have an institutional memory of what to do and not to do.
And they do. That's the thing. We see these survivors constantly doing things that they've just been ingrained to do, like hanging up cans on strings for
perimeters. So I guess some people would say it's more interesting to see them let their guard down and try to recreate a family life than it is for them to constantly stay on battle alert all the time. I don't know that that's true.
There might even be a balance you could reach where they want to settle down. They want to let go of it, but the last 2 years have forced them into not being able to.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on. We can talk about that all day, I'm sure. Before we leave this scene, there's one
we
more
got
thing.
The zombies. We're still talking about Lizzie playing tag with the zombie.
Okay. Sure. You want to say something else?
I thought that the performance here that Melissa McBride gave was really sublime, and that you can see that Carol doesn't want to believe she's dangerous. Like, she looks really hard at Lizzie.
Yes, I was going
to. And
then
she like shakes her head like, no, no.
Like, or she just doesn't know what to do about it, maybe?
Maybe, like, but I thought it was clear, like, there's the idea of, like, this person needs to be, I have to do something about her. And then, like, she had this, I don't know, man. Maybe I'm putting too much on the performance, but I saw this clear, like, dawning horror and then the solution and then, like, shaking her head, no, I can't do that. And this would make sense with what later Carol says about how I should have seen it coming. I did see it coming,
yeah,
but I didn't do anything about it. And the guilt that she feels.
Uh-huh.
That's what I got. And granted, it was the second viewing, but I was really looking at her performance, and she was just on fucking fire this episode.
Oh, yeah. So then Carol takes Mika hunting. They spot a deer, but Mika can't shoot it. And it's okay, though. They have peaches.
Plus, I hate to tell you.
And that is all you get, Mika. That is all you get.
Peach pecan. Pecan to peaches. I hate to tell you, Mika, you wouldn't hit shit holding the gun like you were. So you could fire it away, but...
Yeah, that's...
I think Mika's a little bit much because she's going about like, I love science class. I know the difference between black smoke and white smoke. White smoke's what you get when they pick a pope. but then
when they burn the old pope. What?
But then when you get to the, like, she's like, I can't even kill a planera or whatever the hell. You know what the order. These are, like, almost microscopic creatures.
Uh-huh.
You cut them in half in biology, and if you do it right, they grow back. They can grow into two halves.
Yeah.
Like, really? And this girl in this world is going to talk about feeling bad about cutting up a almost microscopic worm? Like, at least give me a bullfrog. I could never dissect a bullfrog.
I think she's a little young for a bullfrog.
By the way, if you're keeping a score home, this is a nitpick.
All right, yes. Yeah, it is. My question is, how old is this girl, right?
Who knows?
She's
seven.
Probably
she's
a couple years younger than her sister, at least.
7, 8. And Mika's like...
Yeah.
Or Lizzie's like 11.
So I buy most of Mika's performance here, because it's a little naive, but I think that's just a kid's perspective. Like, they don't truly understand the danger that some people can pose. And the idea that, yes, it was a group of people who took out the prison hasn't really struck her in the same way that it struck everyone else.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, and as far as...
just think she's a kid being a kid, whereas Lizzie's a little bit older and psychotic, and I can't figure out her motivation at all.
Yeah, and... You know, like I said in the instant cast, I ran into Brighton Sharbino at the Walker Stalker Con, and she's a spitty thing.
Yeah.
And she's billed age 11. I can only imagine Mika. She's probably like 3 years old.
In real life?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Tyrese proposes that they stay in the cabin for good. And he says it's because he trusts everyone in that party, and he's not sure that he can find that anywhere else. this was good because we know that, you know, after the Karen and David thing that happened, it is especially made good because Carol's the one who killed them. But after that event, Tyrese definitely has trust issues.
Sure.
Someone in the prison betrayed him in a very serious way, and now he doesn't even want to get back to people at this point. He only knows that he can trust the people he's with.
Mm-hmm.
So a very good scene there, I think. Mm-hmm. We go to Mika spotting Lizzie kind of walking out of camp from the barn.
Right.
And she follows her, and then she finds her feeding mice to rats on the tracks. And then when she confronts her, Lizzie almost feeds herself to the walker so she can change, but she's interrupted by burnt walkers from the woods.
And the Gimple did Mika no favors here with this dialogue.
What was it?
We were pretending things were bad. They are bad. They are. Bad things are being, and they are bad. Like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
Little George Lucasian in his
I just felt like there was a lot of repetition of dialogue. Like, when Lizzie's pet walker is killed by Carol, she just keeps yelling, screaming, bent over, doubled over in anguish. You don't understand. You don't understand. You don't understand. You killed him. You don't understand. He was friendly. You don't understand. Like,
you know, it's interesting.
Really?
It's interesting because Andrew Lincoln, when we were at his panel like back in October,
mm-hmm.
they seemed to prize that anguish emotion, that like super crazy ass in your face emotion.
I've never seen anyone in real life act like that.
Well, I mean, I can see where you would in this, but compare that mm-hmm. with the performances that Melissa McBride and Chad Coleman put in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
These are not showy. These are not over the top, and they're some of the best shit we've ever seen. Same with Lenny yeah. Bruce. No, it's not Lenny Bruce. Morgan.
James?
Lenny James.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
I wonder if they're kind of just maybe wrongheaded in what they're going for in the show in general, and that they're going for like big when they should pull it back and go small.
Well, I've really felt like Clear, if not for having an excellent actor, would have been over the top. I think it's very easy to take that emotion that he brought to it over the top. Yeah.
But there again.
And he almost did. He was inches from it, but he pulled it back.
That's a great example of a character that's going through some psychosis, but instead of alienating us as an audience, it drew us in. And it's weird for me to say that because I know not everyone is alienated by these characters.
Sure. No.
But I just wonder how much of that is if you really could step back and examine it, how much of it is just Melissa and Chad selling the shit out of the true horror, which is a kid killing a kid and then you having to put down a kid like a rabid dog.
Yeah.
That's heavy shit.
Very.
And they were able to bring it.
Oh yeah. Every single scene.
So hats off to them. I mean, they, in my mind, saved the episode. Because you imagine if they didn't?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
If there was just no that.
If the performances were even less than great.
Yes.
Right? Just good. Just okay.
Yeah. Like, you know, one commentator early on this season said that Walking Dead hasn't earned the right to play with the big boy toys.
Hmm.
And they're talking about, like, you know, putting babies in jeopardy and things like that. Oh, that was when the Lizzie was trying to strangle Little Askaker.
Uh-huh.
I think you'd have that charge all over again if Chad and Melissa were anything but excellent.
Yeah, you might.
Because it would be exploitive for no good reason. There was no art to it. We didn't feel anything, but we felt something.
I mean, the build-up in this episode was fairly good. I thought, you know, they kind of laid the groundwork for this happening and then built to it in a way that made not only that plot resolution meaningful, but also the resolution between Tyrese and Carol very meaningful. And I think without the former, you couldn't have the latter.
All right. So
we'll talk about that when we get
there. The zombie flambe is making his way up to the train tracks. The girls go screaming and running.
Uh-huh.
Again, Lizzie gives every indication that she's afraid of these walkers.
I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say that was their appearance. They are hideous,
any more or less cinders. Hideous than the other zombies we've seen?
Yeah, well, that's a fair point.
I mean, that's the other thing. Like
when your jaw's hanging off and...
That, yeah. You know, maybe a kid, if a kid was raised by a pack of gruesome zombies, they might grow up thinking that they were not scary. But my my experience with kids were just that the zombies have a tough road to hoe being their friends just because of how hideous and scary they are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, crazy or not. So they're both screaming and running. Lizzie starts killing walkers.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What was her motivation in this scene?
So, what does she say there?
You mean the next scene when she says, you have to stop them sometimes, but... Or,
yeah, that's what I was thinking. She just says that she had to help stop them.
Why?
And we don't know.
If they're no better... If they're better than humans...
If just a moment ago she was willing to let herself change, if just a moment later she's going to kill Lizzie... To help her change.
She had a gun. She could have killed Carol and Tyrese and or then to kill herself, Mika, and they all could have been a zombie family.
Yeah.
That would have been really, I mean, that would have been fucking wild. And people misunderstand when I say things like that would be, I usually opt for like the interesting thing,
mm-hmm.
you know? And if something was more interesting and less interesting, I don't really give a shit about the morality because, you know,
these
are real people.
Sure.
But I got called very monstrous things in email about like my bloodlust towards Judith and all that stuff. And we'll talk about that a little bit later.
Okay.
But I just, again, it's like, I don't get that she has a consistent motivation. And then the end of the scene before they cut the commercial is one of the most awkward edits I've seen in the whole fucking series where it's like, she goes and hugs Carol and they all walk off up until I'm sure the point where they said cut.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like as a direct result of the editor, like Jesus Christ, there's no good ending beat here.
Hmm.
And maybe I'm crazy, but
didn't notice it, but
really, I just thought it was super awkward the way they had like three different cuts and then to them slowly walking off screen as they panned to black.
Hmm.
I felt like cutting it, the scene immediately before that, not the scene, but the cut immediately before that would have been better.
Okay.
And I think that's, again, first-time director syndrome.
As far as the walkers go, the walker on the tracks specifically, they've done a lot of stuff, and we've talked about it in this episode with the fire from Daryl's moonshine party. They've made some interesting connections. We also talked about the other stuff with the group that found Daryl being the same group that was in Rick's house. So there's another connection here that's really interesting, or that's made that's very... much more subtle than a giant plume of smoke in the sky. And that is the walker on the tracks is actually the same walker that Bob was hearing last episode when he couldn't sleep and was talking to Sasha. And we know that because... So in that episode, you can hear like the sounds that the walker is making, and I guess they use those same sound effects for this walker. So I guess they had just recorded, like filmed this episode and went back and put the sound effect into that old episode because you never saw that walker.
Right.
And Bob specifically mentions it sounds like he's stuck on something, which is kind of a cool connection.
Super cool.
Yeah.
I like
and
that.
And way more subtle than a giant plume of smoke.
Sure.
So very cool there.
It's another way that ties the fact that these, I mean, the whole point I think they're making is these are all happening simultaneously.
Exactly. Yeah.
And again,
or very close in time.
It's worked at various levels, but I do like, I gotta respect the fact that they've kept these groups separate.
Mm-hmm.
That's a very interesting choice and a pretty brave choice in the writer's room. Something I think is going to serve them well in seasons to come if they can keep true to it. But yeah, that was, I don't know. I liked it.
All right. I did too. Yeah. And apparently Ryan Thomas liked it as well, because he's the guy who sent us in the email that detailed that, although it was on Reddit. So I would have read it this afternoon anyway.
Other things.
But thank you, Ryan.
Let's go ahead and talk about the other things you talked about, too.
Okay.
Like the fact that, because we had a question about, like, Michonne was shown pretty prominently seeing different paintings in the house that her and Carl were clearing. And what did she see? She saw
flowers.
A bunnies.
A bunny. A blonde girl covered in blood.
And now we've seen, you know, Lizzie was looking at the flowers when she died. The rabbits were savaged by her back in episode 402 or 410?
Two.
410?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And then the blonde girl covered in blood.
Yeah.
Vika.
All foreshadowing for this happening.
Not bad, Gimple.
Yeah, that's very cool. So I feel like they've stepped up their game in regard to that just a little bit.
Certainly. It's not quite a full package yet, but they're you know, again, give a shit scale, they're giving a shit.
Yeah, and they are excising a lot of the Glenn Mazzara plot that we hated so much from the last few seasons.
Mm.
I think that's a fairly important thing for them to do moving forward.
Mm.
So Tyrese and... We go back to Carol, Mika, and Lizzie talking about kind of what it means to live in this new world. Carol here is talking about a very different thing than Lizzie is talking about. And they are both talking about a very different thing than Mika is talking about.
Yeah.
And this reminded me, it was very reminiscent of the scene from the last half season where the governor is talking to Rick. And they're both talking about the same events. They're just talking slightly differently about them. And the people that they're talking around have a different idea from the idea that Rick and Governor have.
Sure.
You want to say anything else about that?
Nope.
Okay, let's move on. When Carol agrees to stay in the cabin, Tyrese tells her about his dreams. This is a fantastic scene.
I dream about Karen. not very good, Tyrese. Swing and a whiff.
We find out that Tyrese isn't ready to be around other people, which we kind of had already mentioned before.
Oh, Christ. McBride's acting here.
Yeah.
When she's got her back turned to Tyrese, and he is just twisting a knife in her gut.
Yeah.
And then the way... Like, that's just... You know, as a person who's not an actor myself, it's amazing that she can get that quality where her, like, breath is catching... When she's trying to reframe, was like, well, maybe they're not haunting us. Because Tyrese is saying, are we doomed to be haunted by the living?
Uh-huh.
She says, well, maybe they're not haunting us. Maybe they're teaching us. Maybe they're showing us, you know, they're giving us the kind of courage we need when we do the terrible things that we have to do.
Yeah, that's fascinating. The idea that the monsters are now helping them survive.
Mm.
That's just a very weird twist and one that I like. It's interesting. So Tyrese has a gun in his hand in this scene because obviously they're out hunting. I don't know why they're both out hunting, leaving the girls alone by themselves. I mean, other than the plot requires it.
Yeah, that's another thing because the freeze tag zombie, you know, we talked about it, how Carol was so close to putting it together.
Yeah.
I think she was close enough that... Maybe she wouldn't have left those kids alone.
I think leaving kids alone in a zombie apocalypse is a bad idea, period. Like,
when one of them is showing signs of mental instability.
And they have a baby with them.
The other thing is, when Carol came upon Lizzie and Mika earlier in the season, the second episode of this half season, do you think she knew that Lizzie was trying to strangle Judith?
I can't answer that. I just don't know.
I kind of assumed that she did and tried, you know, just kind of got there in the nick of time, but maybe she didn't. Mm-hmm. But if she did, then maybe that's one more thing. I don't know. It does seem pretty reckless. Just like we said in Tyrese when in episode two where he left the girls there in the woods, in the middle of the woods to go save some random people. That's irresponsible.
And the idea that Carol is their protector at this point, and she's just going to leave them there?
Yeah, that's the thing where people are like, I can't believe, Aaron, you want this baby to die. No, but if they're going to use it as a lame suspense engine, when I don't believe adults would actually put the baby in needless suspense the way they do, I don't think it's interesting, and I'd rather the baby die.
Okay.
I'd rather a fictional baby die than bore me with this bullshit there. If that makes me a monster, then I guess I'm a monster. Maybe Lizzie will stick up in my defense one day.
Maybe.
He's not bad. He's just different.
You can see
he just wants to be my friend. Don't kill A-Rod.
There's a moment in this scene where Carol almost reveals the truth to Tyrese. You can see it on her face. She's about to, but you know, he's got a gun in his hand. And I think at that point, before he's had to make the decision about what to do with Lizzie, he kills Carol in that moment. If she tells him. Oh,
you know what? I don't know. I actually think that she didn't tell him just because she was overcome by guilt. Because he was basically...
I think it's both, yeah.
He was basically in an honest, unguarded moment telling her that she has done everything she... what she believes.
Mm-hmm.
But it still makes her feel guilty. I just think she couldn't... because it'd be, you know, if she said, well, funny you say that, and just turned around, I just don't feel like the time was right. And
I agree with that, yes. And but Carol, I think if she had, done for.
The thing is, Carol's moral strength is shown later on. Well, you know what? I'll save it for then.
Okay. Let's move on. Carol and Tyrese arrive back at the cabin to find that Lizzie has killed Mika, and Carol gets everyone inside and then puts Mika down before she can turn. Broke her promise to Lizzie.
Yeah, but the real crime was that joke she told about the beer nuts versus deer
nuts.
Oh,
it's true. Yeah.
Like, that's not ethical.
especially not coming from an asshole like Ed.
And holy shit, Lizzie saying, I was just about to change Judith. And then Carol's like, but she can't even walk yet. And then her be like, again, if they'd done a better job of being consistent with her character, that would have been even more freaky than it was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that was creepy. Back inside, Tyrese tells Carol about all the animals that Lizzie's been killing. So that stuff's put to bed.
Two together about all this stuff. And here is Carol's moral strength. Because she could easily just pin this death on Lizzie. And never would have risked confrontation with Tyrese. Because he was ready to do it. And Tyrese wasn't going to go off and kill her, obviously. Tyrese is very disturbed.
Mm-hmm.
But he's, you know, rightfully so sympathetic about this child.
Yeah, he basically wants to... like have Carol take her or for him to take her and just kind of leave, you know, separate the kids at that point, the baby and Lizzie.
There again, I think Melissa did a really great job in this acting scene because you can see as she goes through the motions of trying to consider like, well, maybe I'll just take her. But it's not just Judith she's a threat to. If I close my eyes in front of this girl, she could decide she wants to, you know, change me.
Yeah.
There's no, I mean, it's the ultimate, like, the old man in the boat scenario where he's trying to get grain. He's trying to get a chicken, a bag of grain, and a wolf across the river.
Mm-hmm.
There, and she's doing the mental math, and she's realizing there's no combination this will work. She fucking did that with the power of acting in the space of 30 seconds and a little bit of dialogue. It's just really amazing.
I agree. There is one solution that might have worked, and it's a solution we've seen before. Why doesn't she banish Lizzie? right?
What?
Yeah, banish Lizzie. Don't kill her, just leave her. That's exactly what Rick did with her. Why not?
I do. Are you being serious?
I'm serious.
I'm too drunk to know whether
you're
being an
asshole. I'm totally
completely
serious. No.
That's cruel.
Oh, crueler than killing her.
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I can't argue that.
Because she died not afraid and in no pain, whereas her dumbass in this world would have died screaming.
Yeah, probably so.
And that's if she's found by a fucking zombie. If she's found by some of those fucks that Daryl's with now, it could be a hell of a lot worse.
Oh, yeah.
So, definitely. No, you don't banish an 11-year-old, Jim.
All right, Rick might. So Carol takes Lizzie out to the field and kills her.
You didn't go before the council for approval of killing your sister, Lizzie. I can no longer trust you.
What if they get back up at Terminus together, all of them, and Rick finds out that she killed Lizzie and he banishes her again?
You are on double secret banishment, Carol.
If you come back again... so Carol takes Lizzie out to the field and kills her. This is the best scene in the episode, in my opinion, followed very closely by Tyrese's dream scene. I like that there's no hesitation on Carol's part here. You could easily see her, you know, raising the gun and going, do I really want to do this? Is this the right thing? But Carol knows already it's the right thing. And Carol's had to do this tough thing before. And so she pulls up the gun, she cocks it, and she fires.
A little too Of Mice and Men for you?
No. I mean, I enjoy when they get literary on it. Why not? Yeah. I mean, everything is an homage to something.
And I can see this actually happening, you know. I'm not going to bum myself
out. If you want her to die not scared,
right,
this is a good way to do it.
Right.
I mean, she's already prone to looking at flowers.
Yeah.
So why not? And we know those calm her. Then we go back in to the house for another phenomenal scene where Carol tells Tyrese that she killed Karen and David and tells him why.
Wow. Yeah.
This is where I felt like Chad Coleman really shone in this episode, because before this, yeah, he was good, but he was kind of taking a backseat to Melissa McBride, but this is his scene.
He was fucking intense, man.
Yeah.
I don't know that this is true, but I got several emails, and I think a thread on Reddit, whereas the puzzle that they were working was a puzzle of the actress that played Sophia.
Yeah, I think that was set on Talking Dead.
Oh, okay.
So well, I think it's true, yeah.
Nice touch.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing like earth shattering or brilliant, but it was a nice homage.
Yeah, definitely. And as I was saying before, I think, you know, before killing Lizzie and before understanding how dangerous Lizzie was, and having to make that decision himself, I think Tyrese would have killed Carol. Handed this gun.
I liked Carol basically sliding the gun and letting go before she told the story, because that was her putting her life in Tyrese's hands.
Yeah, and I think she saw the pain that it caused her to have to do this deed. And Tyrese says as much. He says that he understands that Carol felt their deaths.
And
it wasn't something she just did calculating it coldly.
Yeah, him, I mean, he knows how much those girls meant to her,
mm-hmm.
and he saw that she did this for the greater good, and I think that it's almost like at this point for him, irrelevant whether the facts of the matter were correct or not, but he's just basically like, you know, I respect the fact that you do what you need to do to protect people.
Yeah.
And I might not agree with you and Karen and David, but the same person that killed Lizzie killed Karen and David. And it seemed like it was important for him to know whether they were afraid or whether they were in any pain, and that he saw kind of how relatively merciful that Carol did it with Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And better that Carol killed them than Lizzie killed them, because she let him turn.
Well, sure. Although that's, you know, I don't know how much that's actually a thing.
What do you mean?
Being turned into a zombie, a fate worse than death. It doesn't seem like there's...
I think you could make that case, sure.
But I think it's like the same kind of... It's the same impulse that makes people be squeamish about being an organ donor or donating their bodies to science.
Yeah, or worrying about
some physiological, psychological thing where there's part of you trapped inside this rotting hulk. I mean, I don't see there's any evidence of that.
No, I'm with you. I don't think so.
It's more of a courtesy thing than it is a real thing.
It's like, what do you want to be done with your body after you die?
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
You're not going to care, but...
There's still
people who think about it while they're alive.
This is a metaphysical question more than... Because sometimes I wonder if there is something to the whole, you know, Poindexter's research about recognition in zombies' eyes and, you know...
Yeah, and I mean, that goes all the way back to Dawn of the Dead with Bub. I mean, that's...
Or even
as old as zombie movies themselves.
Or even the way they chose to portray Amy's being resurrected and Andrea talking to her.
Yeah.
Is like that was, there's a little bit of like, oh, and also why we're talking about Lenny James, what's his character's name?
Morgan.
Morgan's wife, and coming back to the doorknob.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they used to play with.
I know.
They never do anymore.
Yeah, they don't really.
It's a shame, because that's another way they could get a little bit more horrific with it, a little bit more creepy. Because I do think that's one of the creepiest scenes in the whole series, her fucking trying that doorknob with her and her looking in the, you know, the peephole and Rick looking right back at her.
Yeah.
Still kind of gives me shivers.
Very creepy. So then in the final scene, the group packs their pecans and they head off down the road. Down the tracks toward Terminus.
They did not abandon the baby.
Or the pecans. No, they did not abandon the baby. It was wrapped up on Tyrese's back. It's very obvious.
I think so. So here's the thing, and I'm going to defend myself one last time, well, before we get to feedback. I don't think I'm a monster for saying that it's an interesting choice if they had left. Because people are like, well, that would have made those characters just spot. Yes, but that's interesting.
I don't dispute the fact that it might be interesting.
The thing is
I don't think it would ever happen.
I feel like they're using the baby like they use the USB flash drive in Revolution. It's humanity's last hope or whatever.
A MacGuffin?
Yeah, and it's like, so there's two ways you because a baby's not fucking interesting.
No, there's nothing interesting about
interview
a baby.
Judith about her character, and she will shit her pants and cry for milk, okay? It's not interesting. It's not.
No, you're right.
Set aside your emotion. I promise you I love children. I promise you I love my son. The baby's not interesting as a character. So she's only interesting in what she means to the group. She can be a symbol of hope and a MacGuffin that they're trying to protect.
Mm-hmm.
And, by the way, endanger needlessly and cause us, you know, ringing the Pavlovian bell. And we all, as parents or people that are not, you know, psychotic, get concerned about it. Or the baby can die, and that is also interesting and in what that would make us feel.
Well, they probably ought to do both.
They've killed her kind of three times at this point now.
Yeah, I was going to say they ought to do both because you can only milk one of those aspects while she's alive, and then you get one shot at the other one.
Right.
You can only kill her once.
Unless it's Walking Dead, you get three shots.
Yeah, nobody really believed she was dead after season four.
Dude, I think that's because the Reddit threads and stuff that we talked about.
Sure, yeah, maybe
there was
very
little blatant evidence about, you know. So anyway, my
Except
point
for
is,
no babies.
You got to say which is more interesting. Would you rather see, especially in a zombie apocalypse, would you rather see a screaming zombie magnet continually put in danger over and over again to manipulate us, or would you rather just this be done with?
Sure.
You know, on second thought, I do sound like a monster.
You're a monster.
Convene the Hague Committee. Prepare the gallows.
So my I guess, final question for this episode here. Are Carol and Tyrese leaving for probably the same reason that the previous group at the cabin did? I mean, they show a close-up of this grave with these baby booties
on them. Bronze baby booties.
A couple of times. So we know that, and it's a small grave. We know there's probably a child in there. It feels to me like something bad has happened here before, and Carol and Tyrese couldn't live with what had happened there. They couldn't stay. Do you think that's something that happened in the past as well? Obviously not the same thing, but just something bad happened with this child, obviously.
Totally interesting. However, there was an occupant in the house, I wonder.
That's true. Yeah.
If that is the original occupant and he had buried his wife and older children and youngest child and then died some other way. I mean,
yeah, no, that's a good point.
Certainly something bad happened there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because there was no one there, so except for a walker. All right, that's it. I don't have a zombie kill of the week this time. I mean, I assume it's one of the ash-headed zombies.
Sure. How about the one?
I mean, those were really cool.
The head gets destroyed. I mean,
the one that falls on the ground and you see its head.
That's the House of the Dead homage.
Mm-hmm. And we all know who idiot survivor of the week is this time.
Can you give it to Lizzie? She didn't survive.
But at the time that she was an idiot, she was a survivor.
All right, I would nominate Carol for missing all the obvious signs of insanity.
Okay, if we decide we couldn't give it to Lizzie.
Okay.
All right, and that's it for the recap. Why don't we do some pimping and then get to some feedback?
Okay, so let's talk about this contest.
Okay.
We met a really cool dude, Richard, who's a fan of the show.
Yep.
And he and his wife are living the dream. They've started and it's been a successful screen printing business. And he is now branching off and he's wanting to do some art things, especially involving sci-fi and horror. And he's doing a lot of these really kind of Andy Warhol-esque prints involving like classic movie monsters and he had a really cool print at the con that he sold out of, unfortunately, or we'd have snagged it, called Double Solo.
Yeah.
where he did like a, you know, a two chromatic shift of Han Solo, and it was very, very cool. I'm not doing it justice. You can go to his website at screenmonsters.com. But one thing he did a couple of Walker, some things specifically for Walker Stalker Con. He had like a Hypno Stalker, which is a basic screen print of Daryl.
Mm-hmm.
Although he probably deny it for legal reasons,
with like this funky background.
Yeah, the printed one that kind of, you know, when you have those like arrangements of black and white lines where it kind of looks like it's pulsating or you're tripping on acid.
Yeah,
and he had a couple things like that, but he also had a couple silk screened angel wings.
Mm-hmm.
He's giving away, and he's giving away a set of those full size and kids.
Yeah, he calls them the ass kickers,
the little ass kicker wings. if you got a little ass kicker of your own that you wanted, these are sew on; they're not iron on, so you'd have to do a little bit of crafty stuff to get them to look right. But they are really cool. I got a picture of Jim holding them up on Jim's back that we're going to be posting to the website and Facebook. If this is something you're interested in winning, the way to do it is easy. You go to subbable.com/baldmove and you sign up. No purchase necessary. You do not have to back us for anything. You just have to subscribe.
Mm-hmm.
And then send us an email called with a subject, wings.
Yep. How and do you spell subbable?
It's subbable.com. It's subscribe, okay, with a double B, able.com.
It's a word I've never heard.
Well, it's an invented word. It's probably the reason it was still available to be registered as a domain.
Yeah.
Subbable.com/baldmove. Sign up. If you've got a Google account and you've got especially an Amazon account, you're already home free. It's basically instantaneous.
Or if you're already signed up, just send us an email.
Yeah.
With the subject wings.
Yeah, you don't have to sign up twice. It's not new subscribers. You just have to be a subscriber to win. Again, no purchase necessary. You do not have to back us for any particular dollar amount at all. Mm-hmm. Although we'd appreciate it.
Sure.
And you will be entered, and we will pick a winner probably.
I'd say at the finale. How about the finale episode?
Oh, 2 weeks from now. I think we need to do it this week.
Before then?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then you better hurry up and get your entries in.
We'll pick a winner by showtime on Sunday night. How about that?
Wow. That's only 5 days, people. You need to get it in quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
So don't procrastinate.
It's a two-step process. Make sure you're subscribed on subbable.com/baldmove. Then send us an email, wings.
Yeah. So we'll pick one person for the big wings and one person for the little ass kicker.
I think they're going
to
getting
both.
They're going to both.
Yeah. Oh, only one winner. Okay.
Yeah, only one winner. Act now. Supplies are limited. So yeah, thank you, Richard. Again,
yeah.
Screenmonsters.com. We might be doing some other stuff with them in the future. Really cool to meet you.
Yeah, very cool meeting you at the meetup.
Also, I in our meetup at Walker Stalker Con, I felt like we haven't done a very good job describing the subbable model. So I'm going to spend another 30 to 60 seconds talking about that. And because Jim and I, like, we figure we say it once and everybody gets it, and then we're shy about saying it again.
Yeah.
Subbable is just a website that allows a listener or a consumer of content to back and subscribe and pay for a patron and be the patron of the person making the content. And you can do that with a one-time infusion of cash. You can say, I want to give Bald Move a dollar, and it's just going to be a one-time deal, and boom, they've got a dollar. Or you can say, I want to give them a dollar every month, let it be 12 months out of the year. And, you know, there's an Amazon payment system. It's nice and safe and secure. And it takes that and gives that money into Gemini's pockets. The cool thing is we've got these perk levels. And every time you send us a dollar or $5 or $10, gets converted into perk dollars. And you can redeem those on Subbable for different reward levels. So let's say you're jonesing for the $50 level, which I don't even know what the hell that is, Jim.
I don't know either. I don't know that we have a $50 level.
But
I think it's $60.
But let's say we have something cool that you want to save up for. Well, $5 a month for 10 times, you can. It's not like a Kickstarter where you got to like, oh, I want the $50 thing, but I can't afford it.
Yeah.
You can do $5 a month, and in 10 months, you're there. As soon as you get to the level you want, you cash it in. Boom, yep. You got it.
Very cool.
So it's kind of like it's a lot like Kickstarter, except for it's like Kickstarter on layaway.
Yeah.
But you can.
Kickstarter on speed.
It's like Kickstarter on speed, man. Man, super disappointed that I did that to Lou and he didn't get it.
He just didn't care.
Yeah. Because you got your picture taken.
I did. I got a picture with Lou Temple. I got a picture with Greg Nicotero, which was freaking awesome. Yeah. And I got to meet Gwendolyn Christie. That was super cool.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Anyway, that's subbable.com/baldmove in a nutshell.
Yeah.
Jim and I are doing this full time starting very soon. And, you know, this is one of the revenue streams we've got to kind of support ourselves and our families. And if you would be so generous to sign up, again, it costs nothing to sign up. But if you want to kick in a little extra, we greatly appreciate it. It's what really is going to enable us to turn on the Bald Move spigot to full maximum flow here this year.
For sure.
You know, we are, of course, part of the Bald Move Network. You can find all of our content at baldmove.com. All of our television stuff, but also our affiliates, the Personal Arrogance Crew out of Seattle. This year, they're talking about Flappy Bird Postmortem. Did you get to play Flappy Bird?
I didn't, no.
You poor bastard. You never will now. You'll have to satisfy yourself to 12 clones. It's in the app store now.
That is okay. I can live my life having never played Flappy Birds.
They do a Ghostbusters 3 treatment. They have science news. Talk about the Steam Revolution. The Because Show and Up Yours Downstairs are both on hiatus this week. They've taken a week off. Especially Up Yours Downstairs just finished up with...
Full season of
Downton Abbey. It was another crazy season. They're coming back next week with a season recap. So if you want to get some feedback into them or... sort through your feelings about that, check them out. Always appreciate your ratings, reviews on iTunes, especially after a week like this when we're sure that they got beating a fucking beating behind the woodshed.
whoa.
It's the single biggest thing you can do to drive traffic to your cast, and honestly, one star is probably help as much as five stars, because it's all about the recency and the heat being generated by these crazy ass reviews. That's my theory anyway.
All right.
Finally, Amazon affiliate link always works. Amazon.baldmove.com. Anything you buy on Amazon, if you're buying shit anyway, use that link and we get a cut of the profits. It's really great. And
sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hit some feedback, man.
Feedback. Keith B. on Facebook says, we would have bought into the idea of a girl like Carol's daughter, a poor child with a physically abusive redneck father and a weak-willed mother becoming as psychologically twisted as Lizzie. We would have related to Carol's daughter's rejection of the living, her role models, and her acceptance of the undead. Her craziness would have made sense to us. Who could have made sense of Lizzie's craziness? Lizzie's parents didn't give her any cause to distrust or reject the living. There was no mention of Lizzie torturing animals before the zombie apocalypse. It's not enough that the trauma of the apocalypse changed her from everything nice to everything knife. We would have found her character a lot more compelling if we could have imagined her going over the edge in a world where the apocalypse didn't happen.
I completely agree. The thing is, like, not that none of that happened, but that we were just never shown it. It's a matter of, was she torturing animals before the zombie apocalypse? Did the zombie apocalypse break her? Was she a normal girl before? We need a flashback. We need some sort of something to tell us who she was before she went crazy.
Right. And yeah,
we got none of it.
And we got some more of that. What would you think if they were able to keep Sophie going, if they didn't just use her as a kind of meaningless go nowhere plot device for all of season,
which turned out to be awesome at the very end. But
yeah,
out of that barn was pretty freaking rad.
But what if she had lived and steadily over the last three seasons kind of come unhinged?
Well, that's perfect. Then we see a backstory for this character. Then we see it in action. We don't know anything about Lizzie's psychosis, except that she is crazy.
Yeah, and we get the writers a lot more. Of course, you know, we had three showrunners since then, so God only.
Yeah, that's
true. Might have been a disaster, too. Jason A. says, burn walkers aren't an anomaly. It's not something this episode introduced. The governor's pile of burn walkers at the bottom of the screaming pits were still moving, if you'll recall.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that this was a set piece that breaks canon. What broke canon is episode one of season two. Those zombies are the exception, as no reasonable explanation except that Darabont wanted a cool set piece.
I'm with you, but... how do I reconcile those two things?
Yeah.
They've both been shown to me on screen.
I got a way.
All right.
Alcohol fires just aren't that hot.
No.
They don't have the heat necessary to cook a brain.
The trouble is, when she shoots the head off that zombie, its brain is ash. Like, you can clearly see it is just a smoldering cinder of a brain.
All right. That is some bullshit. Tyler S. says, he's applying for a role of poet laureate here.
Okay. Well, what's he got?
There once was a crazed little lass who liked to chase walkers through the grass. Too bad the bite missed her because she killed her sister, and now they're both plant biomass.
Oh, that last line is a stretch, but I like it. I like it.
Very nice, Tyler. Very nice. Ginny D says, I wonder if the fact that Tyrese was able to forgive Carol for Karen's muster. Wait, whoa. Karen's muster? Let me increase the font size a little
they
bit.
They have mustard and pecans?
Mustard pecans are pretty good.
I've never had them.
It gives you green poupon.
Oh, no.
I wonder if the fact that Tyrese was able to forgive Carol for Karen's murder because he had just had to make the same decision about Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
If Carol's confession had come at any point before an ethical dilemma, I think the outcome would have been very different.
Totally
on board with that, Jenny.
No, you're absolutely right.
Ryan M. says, I wondered if you'd ever compiled a list of the best acting performances moments on the show's history. The show hasn't been blessed with the strongest actors. It's a little embarrassing, really, that every other cable show has an actor headlining a new movie. Kit Harington, Joel Kinnaman, Aaron Paul, even fucking Sullivan Stapleton from Strike Back in the new 300.
Who?
But The Walking Dead, you haven't seen Strike Back yet.
No, I have. On Cinemax?
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw one episode.
One of the leads of that.
Okay.
But The Walking Dead isn't seeing their actors pop up anywhere in movies.
Wait, what? Norman Reedus, Andrew Lincoln?
What have
huge
they been
movie
in
stars before this? All of their time is taken up with the show,
this
man.
This is where movie stars go to die, is what he's saying.
Okay, maybe Ryan. So.
Ryan them.
I doubt this will kill Norman Reedus' career, honestly. It'll make it better.
However, I want to give a special shout out to Chad Coleman's reaction to when he saw Lizzie standing over Mika with that knife. It was utter horror, conveyed in an understated, realistic way. Exactly. The Walking Dead would have the potential to be an all-time great show if they kept that level of acting throughout the series. Totally agree, man. Totally agree.
You said it all in understated realistic. That, to me, is the key to good acting, and that it wasn't totally brought by everyone in this episode.
Nina P. from ProjectFandom.com once again is disappointed with us, Jim. I don't know what we've done to deserve this.
Shit all over the episode in our instant cast.
Maybe. But we didn't.
We didn't. We spent the first 10 minutes
praising. The first 10 minutes over this episode, man.
We did.
Rightfully
yeah.
so. Nina P says, guys, Lizzie was mentally ill. The first time we heard Mika tell her, Lizzie, look at the flowers, we assumed it was an off-the-cuff direction to calm her down because her dad had just died. She's referring, of course, to the second episode of season 4A, Infected. In this episode, after the Jason Roberts walker tried to attack, she said, I don't want to say. When asked why she was upset, she wasn't scared of that walker. She knew that they were going to come out and kill it, and it freaked her the fuck out. She had no control over that. Mika immediately went into the look at the flowers, but added, let's count to three. Even Carol looked confused. I think this was to show that this is something that they'd been employing with Lizzie long before we met them at the prison. I would go so far as to speculate that this is why there's a picture of flowers in their cell to begin with, to give her something to look at when they needed to calm her. Cool theory, bro.
So has she always been psychotic?
That's her theory, but that's something that's being read into the material that's not in evidence. And you can do that. Like, the perfect example, Gale, Walking Dead, or Gale, Breaking Bad, happened to have a bust on his shelf of his apartment that had the face half peeled off.
Mm-hmm.
People are like, oh my God, that foreshadowed Gus, fucking brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's right or not, it had nothing to do with the mechanics of the plot.
I'll give you a counterexample.
Just let me finish my thought.
Yeah, sorry.
This is actually something the plot hinges on.
Yeah.
I don't think you can really assume that they had this elaborate flower therapy to deal with her. And if so, why wouldn't her father mention that before he died? Mm-hmm. And why wouldn't Mika have mentioned that, you know, to Carol? It's like, this shouldn't be surprise. If it's a surprise to us as an audience, it shouldn't be a surprise to all the characters. It just feels like they're making shit up. What were you going to say, Jim?
Let me address that point real quick. I think there is a tightrope you can walk because I don't want characters to just monologue about everything that's important to their character development.
Yeah, show, not tell.
Sure, show, not tell, but also you can imply quite a bit, like you were talking about earlier with just Melissa McBride's facial expression.
Okay.
Her understanding, I need to do something about Lizzie. She's crazy, but I can't. That's not explicitly drawn out in the episode, but it's something you can just figure out by watching the episode. But I think a lot of these theories, like especially with Bob, people are saying like, and this is totally blown out of the water now because we know that Bob wasn't dissecting the rats, none of that stuff.
Right.
But people are saying that Bob is like some some lunatic as well.
Or he was an agent of the governor.
Or an agent of the governor, yeah, whatever you want to say, going back to the last half season. There's nothing on screen to tell us any of that. It's all speculation.
Right.
All of it, based on just ideas that might be cool.
Right.
That's fine. You can speculate, but the idea that they're not showing us something on screen that we need to know to understand what's actually going on is not cool. It's silly.
I concur. Nina continues. Anyway, right before the Walker came out, Mika assumed Lizzie was upset by the baby's grave, and Lizzie told her that she was upset because if they found Walkers in there, they're going to kill them. If she can't talk them into sparing one like the incapacitated one on the tracks, or if she can talk them into sparing one like the incapacitated one on the tracks, she will. I think it is easier for her to kill the ones who were burned because they were so burned. She said something later in the table like, I understand when they're in groups like that, we have to kill them. But Lizzie will have to reason with Henry at the prison, female Walker playing tag, and save Walker on tracks, a single Walker, if she can. Another one is like, okay, again, cool theory about her feeling sorry for the burned Walkers. But where the hell is that? Because all the Walkers are pretty fucking miserable condition physically.
Yeah,
even the coverall dudes that she's feeding rats at the prison is an obviously rotted corpse.
Yeah.
So why did she, you know, it's like, well, they're extra scary because they're burned. Again, that's a cool theory.
I mean, yeah, maybe.
But there's nothing on screen says that.
Yeah, if they would have wanted us to get that, they should have told us that.
And if we
somehow
just go by what we saw from the performances and what the character said, we have a kind of a jumbled mess where we have to put meaning on it as the audience, and I don't really like that.
Yeah, it's tough when you're dealing with actual meaningful plot points. Like, if you want to read into some kind of theme, or you want to read into, like, the meaning of a specific character's actions in one instance that doesn't necessarily have to do with the overarching plot,
yeah,
that's fine. But when we need to know a sequence of events here,
and again,
we need to understand it.
The scenes with Carol and Tyrese are going to be much more weighted emotionally to the extent that we believe in all the characters.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't think anyone can say they really connected with Lizzie as a real little girl or someone to be pitied.
I don't know if you can say that. You can't speak for everyone, certainly, right?
I don't know.
I mean, maybe some people did connect with him. You didn't.
Really?
You didn't. You could say that.
Okay. Well, you're right. You're right. I don't want to be come across that arrogant. I'm just saying that for me, it was hard to connect what would made it a 360-degree awesome performance if I connected with the little girls as well as I did with, and it was a tragic inevitability.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand Lizzie's motivations enough to see the tragic inevitability of it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Sure. Yeah. And apparently neither did Carol because she did nothing about it. So,
all right, Daniel, or it might be Danielle, I might have fucking wrote that down wrong, from Australia, said, in our society, we fight to keep children alive, and wars, plagues, and pretty much every historical event, most people lay down their lives for children of all ages. I don't remember any great stories in history that involve people killing children as they made survival difficult. I think Judith offers tension to scenes that is a positive, not a negative, and you yourself as a father, I find it amazing you don't feel that. The scene of her crying on the rug near a dead Mika was chilling itself. Great imagery. I can't argue with that. For you to even suggest that the show could have or should have gone down a road of abandoning her to kill or killing her off would change the dynamic of the show, the characters, and frankly would be a disaster. It would make Carol and or Tyrese despised by much of the audience. Yes, but characters that you despise can be fucking interesting.
That's true, yeah.
I think Jim was spot on that it would be a very bad decision, and I'm struggling with your lobbying for Judith's head. I still think the writers see her as a hope for the future, and frankly, that's a worldwide opinion when it comes to children in times of disaster and crisis. For me, it's a better show with Judith in it, as I know many people care that little bit more. I don't even know that that's true. There's certainly lots of stories in truly desperate situations where parents have to sacrifice their children or decide to sacrifice their children because they're driven mad by hunger or despair or fear. Lots of real examples in human history. I can't think of any in fiction. I want to say Grapes of Wrath, maybe.
I haven't read that.
That final scene where I can't remember if the young mother, her baby died. Anyway, I don't agree that keeping babies alive all the time is 100% the requirement of fiction.
Keep digging, man. Keep digging. I don't believe we need to keep babies alive.
But you're right. I mean, the scene of her crawling on a rug near dead Mika was chilling in itself. Great imagery. Yeah. The other thing you got to understand about me is I am really over the threat of her being dead and the fact that she faked me out in thinking her dead. Because, again, I'll go back and say there's two ways she can be used. Icon, hope for the future, or sympathy magnet.
Or...
And they've already played that button twice now.
They have. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And do you think it's interesting that if they would just continue to do that? I mean, how many seasons? Let's say she's 2 years old and she's a toddler now. She's 3 years old. She becomes the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen of The Walking Dead. At what point do you say enough is a fucking enough?
I think just go ahead and make the spinoff The Crawling Dead and you're all good.
Yeah, how do you get off easy, Mr. Zombaby? How do you avoid
I don't
any
want
of this?
Judith dead. I'm just saying if there's a Zombaby out there, I want
to
see it.
No, I don't want Judith dead. If I was in The Walking Dead, I would die to save Judith.
That's very noble of you.
As an outside watcher, I'm calling bullshit on the fact of them using that as an emotional fulcrum.
No, I totally get what you're saying. Completely. And I don't think you are a potential baby murderer. I just think that you are tired of this plot device.
Yeah.
That they've used over and over again. Yeah.
And they haven't overused it yet. It's just the fact that they did it so blatantly on the last cliffhanger.
Yeah, yeah. They did.
And then again, it's like, do you trust a person?
Then they tried to smother it. Like, pick a side. Go with it.
Yeah, this is the third time now they put her in mortal jeopardy to make us get an emotional reaction. How many more times can they go to that Walker polluted well and still get water? That's
we'll
the question
out.
You got to ask. Maddie says, Greg Nicotero said something about how the walkers do their disintegrating eyes can only see movement and light. Thus, the crispy walkers in this week's episode that apparently had been attracted by the distant fire. Weren't walkers coming straight at people standing still in thick fog just a week ago? Well, that was...
They're also attracted to sound, right? Were they making noise?
I don't know. They didn't much... I will say that I think that's one of the things that Darabont regime intended to do is stay very faithful to a set of facts in the zombie Bible.
Yeah.
And I think that other showrunners have played fast and loose. But it used to be that, you know, zombies were first attracted by movement and sound and scent. And those were their key, like... I guess it should be scent, then sound, then movement in order of their keenness of senses. They were very good at smell. That was the last of their senses to go. They were very good at hearing, less so at seeing.
There was a zombie Bible that came out for the show, right?
We in the old zombie drill.
We talked about it, yeah.
Which we need to release because we let that slip out at the meetup and people are clamoring for it.
Okay. Sure.
I don't know if they're knowing what they're clamoring
for. Yeah, they have no idea what they're getting.
The Walking Dead pre-alpha version. It sometimes crashed on you. I just don't... I mean, maybe the fog zombies were fresher zombies. They had more functioning eyes. But they still had hearing and smell, so what the hell. Kimberly M. said, totally understand your frustration or the motivations of Lizzie. Well, thank you. That's nice.
What?
I think it would have been cooler to slip inside her mind and see what she saw, kind of like a flash present. But I think the larger issue episode superseded the details. The fact that Carol and Tyrese have had come around to deal with Lizzie, that they had to do this together, is directly related back to Carol killing Karen and David on her own. Totally correct. which leads to Carol's confession to Tyrese. She understands Carol's position, right or wrong, because they had just decided to kill Lizzie for the good of the group. Hard decisions all, but it comes full circle. The show has questions that it had to answer, and these episodes have been doing that, right? In order to go forward with a clean slate, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think this episode was very well plotted, aside from just not understanding Lizzie's motivations. And we talked about kind of the...
And that was a path that took 14 episodes to get to. This wasn't a failure of this episode. Sure. Although I argue that with the time they had and that this was multiple failures leading up to it. And again, this episode is not a failure.
Sure.
This episode is really good.
This episode was...
Despite the lack of foundation. Just like Lori's death was really affecting, despite the fact that we didn't give a shit about her character.
Yeah.
Anything else to say, or should we move on?
What do you think Lizzie POV looks like on film? You think it's just like a bunch of flowers and walkers, like, playing with her in the fields, like, swinging around hand in hand?
Yeah, in circles? No, I feel like the zombies are replaced by, like, unicorns and kittens.
Okay,
there's rainbows, and the people have, like, skulls over their faces. And it's kind of like the Cornify. Have you seen that?
The Cornify
plugin for like Chrome and Firefox that just randomly adds unicorns and rainbows to websites.
No, I've seen the one that puts velociraptors at the bottom.
Oh, well, same thing, only less horrifying.
Okay.
Joshua S. says, we really haven't learned anything new about... Uh-oh, this is a negative Nelly. We really haven't learned anything new about the characters in this half of the season. Bob was lonely because he was alone. Daryl was a nobody who followed his brother around. Carl is a bitchy teenage boy with pudding addiction. We did find out about his pudding addiction. Tragic pudding addiction.
Yeah, that's true.
Maggie needs to find Glenn because he is all she has left. Sorry, Beth. The only person we really found anything out about was Michonne, but we kind of already knew that she had lost a child when she started bawling after holding Judith. Hilariously, he spelled bawling B-A-L-L-I-N-G. Like, she's bawling. She's bawling out of control.
She was. Did you see all the cash in her purse?
I shouldn't pick on you, man, but that was super funny. Sorry. just, you know, I'm the guy that says Martinez. So.
Right.
The only person we found anything... Oh, wait. Sorry. I feel like they're wasting Chad Coleman the same way they wasted Michonne in season 3-1. Instead of getting the mean mugs, we get the confused Tyrese look, which looks like this.
Sure. No. What? Was this email sent after this episode aired?
Yeah.
Because they definitely didn't waste Chad Coleman in this episode.
We did get a lot of confused Tyrese, though.
We did, yeah. And a lot of horrified Tyrese.
Right. So
I liked... Tyrese is what I liked.
They have not used Chad Coleman effectively in the series up until now.
Okay, I will give you that, but this episode...
fucking amazing.
Uh-huh.
And they're starting to get a feel over how to use, LG2. They're starting to get a feel of how to use this. I mean, they've got some serious acting talent on this show.
Yeah.
So I do think his point there, you know, is a good one.
And I would argue that up until now, I haven't seen anything that really indicated how good of an actress Melissa McBride was either.
I have.
I mean, there have been glimpses of it, but this episode is just a tornado.
That time she went to town on her husband Ed's head in the first season.
That's a long time ago.
That
okay.
was a lot of emotion shown.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I just didn't.
She did just. The thing is, she was written terribly in season two. Yeah. By far the well, other than like maybe Lori,
but okay, yeah, by far,
and Andrea. My God, the women—they just didn't have a good handle on the women in season two. She wasn't written very well at all.
Yeah.
It was like passive aggressive. I'm mad that my daughter. I'm kind of sad. I'm kind of ambivalent. I don't feel anything. Really weird. But starting in season three, she's really become one of my favorite characters.
Yeah, absolutely. Once they hit the prison, she just morphed into something that. Yeah, it's really interesting to watch.
Lori C. said, I like that the show is giving the viewers attention or answers to lingering questions and the characters are talking to each other, not withholding information for just for the sake of drama. That said, I'm not sure I believe Tyrese would be so forgiving of Carol. What happened to change his outlook? How did he go from maniacal and beating on Rick to then so calm and saintly towards Carol? Did I miss something here? The entire last 20 minutes of the episode...
Apparently. Yeah. That changed Tyrese's mind completely.
He saw her at great sacrifice do something to protect their small group.
And he had to make the same decision himself.
And he knows that she didn't do this without thinking about it. That she feels the weight of her actions on her soul the same as he does. But so what do you think he meant by "I forgive you, but I don't forget"? I don't forget.
I think he means exactly that. I mean, he thinks he will just remember this. This is something that, you know, the death of his girlfriend.
Ice cold.
No. I don't think that has anything to do with Carol. Honestly, I think that just has to do with him remembering his girlfriend who was killed. And he forgives her for that action, but he's not going to forget that it happened. Like, how can he?
Interesting bookmark to this email. Tom said, impressed that the writers made it believable that Tyrese would genuinely forgive Carol after what they just experienced together. Did not really see a way both could exist in the same group again. Although, again, another episode where the lost romantic relationship is mourned, but no mention of the missing sibling. Oh!
Yeah.
Fucking A.
Yeah, where's Sasha?
Where's Sasha at, String? He also has a parenthetical. Did a part of you hope Rick would stumble out of the woods just as Carol was shooting the kid?
No, but I did hope
God
Carl.
Damn it, Carol, not again.
I did hope Carl would stumble out as they shot the deer. Is that roughly the same?
Deer are fucking bad news in this. They're either being chowed down by zombies, they're killing kids. Or
especially when Carol says you have to toughen up and you have to be prepared to kill things. Otherwise, you're going to die. And she can't kill the deer, and she dies in this episode.
Well,
that's rough.
Not for Bambi. Mr. Rockin' Rock said, would it have been more powerful for Carol to have immediately shot Lizzie the moment Tyrese took Judith to safety? This is something
this
I propounded on the Instant Cast. Short answer, yes. However, I think it's necessary to play out this way for the sake of believability of the Tyrese storyline. I arrive at this conclusion thusly. Yeah, you vigorously nodded your head no.
I said no until he said that.
All right, well,
and then
fuck off.
And then I totally agree.
Mr. Rockinock has the stage.
All right,
the
bring
floor
it.
Does not recognize Jim Jones' authority to bulge in the middle of an email.
Well.
Get that bulge to take it elsewhere, sir.
You know.
I had trouble swallowing Tyrese's forgiveness of Carol. I think that scenario happens all too often on screen. So at first I chalked his motivation up to a bit of morality with a sprinkle of pragmatism. When he said he would forgive but not forget, I thought that was a way of his saying, good night, Carol. Good work. Sleep well. I'll most likely kill you in the morning. you don't get that because you've not seen The Princess Bride.
No, but I don't think he's going to kill her. That's just a joke. Okay. Gotcha.
Then I heard some discussion in another podcast where a panelist posited that Tyrese realized in retrospect that Karen's fate had already been sealed, the fate being a long period of suffering, then dying, then possibly turning.
Okay, I could buy that.
Except for Tyrese's sister, who beat it.
Yeah, and Glenn,
but
who
he doesn't
apparently
remember her clearly.
Yeah.
And Glenn, too.
Right.
Glenn should have been the healthy one, and Beth should have been the sick one, and this would have been a very neat comparison.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, would you stop interrupting Mr. Rock and Not Rock?
I'm sorry, Mr. Rock and Rock.
Such a rude host. During the time that passed since her quote-unquote passing, he probably came to the conclusion that she likely wouldn't have lasted until the meds arrived. He may have even come to reconcile her death as a blessing in disguise, considering the suffering it obviated. After Carol's confession, Tyrese was concerned about whether there was any suffering during that fateful night. This isn't normally the first question a person asks of his girlfriend's murderer, mind you, unless the suffering angle was the crux of his psychological reconciliation of a loved one's death. In addition to that, Tyrese was finally forced to face the post-zombie apocalyptic moral dilemma. And being part of the What to Do with Lizzie deliberation, he was able to see that certain impossibly hard choices had to be made in their world. This gave him a glimpse of what Carol's mindset was regarding Karen and David, right or wrong. He also realized that he personally couldn't do what had to be done. Ooh.
Hmm.
That might be the whole scene of him looking at the window, that he's like, fuck, I couldn't do this.
Yeah.
If Carol weren't here, I'd be fucked. Because I'd try to fucking bumble along with Judith and this girl both.
Could you please stop interrupting Mr. Rock and Rock?
You're right. I'm sorry. As for Carol, in a way, she showed that she's ready to rejoin society, as it were. She's still willing to do the hard things, but this time after the requisite deliberation.
Yeah, no, he's absolutely right. He nails everybody's motivation in that scene and throughout this episode. Couldn't agree more.
Oh, I gotta get some fan service out of the way.
Okay.
God damn it. I'm sorry, Stacy. Moving on.
Okay.
Lisa S-R said, I think that the writers were trying to get us to drop our guard when Lizzie started shooting the crispy zombies, and that way that Carol looked at her approvingly. So when Lizzie killed Mika, it was more of a shock. I'm with you. I would have liked to seen Lizzie with more consistency in her character and motivation. The way she flip-flopped made me lose interest in her character. And frankly, at the beginning of the show, I was shouting at the TV that I couldn't stand to watch her anymore of this storyline. Also, a reminder that the last thing that Carol said to Lizzie was, everything will turn out the way it should, which is what Lizzie's mom used to say to the girls. On a side note, Melissa McBride revealed that the jigsaw that was on the table was with her was Tyrese. Yep. It was actually Sophia in her rainbow shirt. Remember to bring that up in the cast. So thank you.
I feel like
that.
We should print up a rainbow shirt to wear to the next con.
Can it be like half shirt so my midriff is exposed?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right,
sure.
Right on. Deb K, that had to be an incredibly difficult role for a youngster to play. Agreed. A kid her age is only going to have the most minimal understanding of the psychosis or mental illness involved, and to try to understand the motivation of and perhaps portray someone suffering from it to the degree of a serial killer takes mega moxie. You want to bitch slap the director and writers for not having a handle on crazy, then go for it. And Deb, I do. But I'm crediting the kid with making the scenes as believable as she could. And I could get behind that.
As believable as she could, certainly. Yes.
Having Lizzie weave back and forth imperceptibly between lucidity and crazy town may be inconsistent with the patterns of schizophrenia, but I can accept the premise of walking corpses. I can be a little flexible on characters displaying a bit of inconsistent behavior. That's interesting, because I'm the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
Like, my suspension of disbelief goes as far as walkers.
Yeah.
Like,
it goes as far as the universe.
If Chad Coleman started fucking levitating, I'd be like, what the fuck?
Sure.
Like, just because I accept something impossible is happening doesn't mean, like, okay, I've given you that. I've carved off that territory. All I ask you is now to be logically consistent in the way that you treat these weird things.
Sure.
It doesn't apply to, like, okay, well, you can just be fast and loose with the crazy character, and it'll be like, well, whatever, walkers.
So do you think it's a little too late for them to start establishing new rules as far as walkers go? Can the walkers evolve? Can the disease change?
Well, I mean, in my mind, no.
Yeah,
but
me too.
Unless they have something, I mean, they would have, I don't know, I guess there's a way they could handle that.
Maybe so.
But it can't just be at the whim of a plot. Then it's because, yeah, like Superman, it's like he can do anything that writers need him to.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, it's always fascinating, returning to Deb's email, when the series explores how this new landscape for humanity would change what constitutes being moral or ethical and the hard and painful decisions that would ensue. Poor Carol has become the self-appointed mommy of the zombie apocalypse, saddling herself with all the terrible tasks that nobody else wants to undertake, and whether right or wrong, cleaning house with efficiency that would make the undead Martha Stewart proud. Perhaps that'd be a cool t-shirt, an undead Martha Stewart. It's a good thing. Perhaps it's an atonement of whatever culpability she feels in Sophia's death, or perhaps it's an extension of the battered wife mentality that kept her trudging along before Patient Zero. What do you think of it, Debs? I think we already talked about most of it.
We did, yeah.
And yes, Carol is very, as post-apocalyptic mama, she's pretty amazing. Yardley H says, I think the writers missed a huge opportunity to make Carol's confession to Tyrese way more intense, and they wasted another chance to let Chad Coleman flex his acting muscles. Throughout the episode, Tyrese says Karen is constantly in his dreams, and he always thinks about her and how she died, and when he finds out, he doesn't even push over the table. Really? Yardley wanted to see some table flipping.
Okay.
There should have been a moment.
Puzzle pieces everywhere.
They'd never been able to put it together then.
No way.
There was this huge buildup to what would happen when Tyrese found out, and the writers have written his character to where you knew there was no chance he would kill Carol, so no suspense there at all.
I didn't know that. Right. I didn't know that watching that scene.
Well,
maybe I'm dumb, but I didn't know
suspected,
it.
But mm-hmm. I thought that they did a good job of me knowing Tyrese the way I did and knowing his seeing what he was seeing through his own eyes, that I surmise that he'd probably spare Carol.
Okay.
Anyway, Yardley felt there's no suspense there. In your opinion, what does "I'll forgive you but not forget" mean in their situation? I'll fuck you up if you do that to my next girlfriend? Question mark.
Yeah, every girlfriend Tyrese gets, Carol just kills her.
I think he meant "I forgive you" because this specifically is something where you felt like you were trying to protect a group. And I agree with whoever said it above that as the patient zero of the prison flu, Karen is probably a goner anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But Tyrese is like, I now know this. Tyrese couldn't do that.
Yeah.
And I feel like anytime, like, you're a type of person that can't do something, like if you're uncomfortable at lying and then you find out someone is an accomplished liar,
uh-huh,
that's really interesting information to know about that person. And it's going to inform, sure, you know, it's like
how you deal with him in the future.
Yeah. You might want me to believe you. Or Tyrese, like, you might, like, it'd be interesting in a season that Carol needs him to be merciful for her, and he's, like, you know, hoist her on her own petard here, so to speak. So, yeah. I think that's what he meant. Like, gotcha. I forgive you, but I now see you.
Yeah, yeah, I understand what kind of person you are. That makes a lot more sense.
Last non-spoiler email. Tony from Colorado said, I never liked the lines that the kids have, or sometimes the lines... Let me back this up. I never liked the lines that the kids have, or sometimes the lines are good, but the actors have a hard time delivering them. I think Lizzie's freak out in this episode over Carol killing the zombie's playmate was way overacted, and I rolled my eyes and smiled because it looked like a skit off of SNL. Maybe if she sobbed uncontrollably and muttered those same lines, it would have been more disturbing, showing more heartbreak than anger. Agreed, mm-hmm. And that's 100% direction.
Yeah.
Because the lines are what they are, and, you know, it's like, my son can't play guitar.
Okay.
If I had 2 weeks in preparation, I could maybe teach him to play something really simple, like the entire catalog of Nirvana. I kid. But, you know, it's like I could teach him some power chords, or like maybe the opening bars of the Star Wars theme or something, okay? Mm-hmm. If I knew I had to get the shit on film. I wouldn't fucking have him play some
Hendrix.
Some Hendrix or Joe what is his name?
Satriani.
Satriani.
Yeah.
I that would just be setting him up to fail, and I would be an asshole.
Gotcha.
So, like, I feel like, again, I'm totally on I'm totally on Brighton's side here. She was not generously directed and written for at all.
Okay.
This show tries hard to get their message across when something less is more. Another example in a different episode is Carol talking to Dad when he's in a mini coma. Way overdone. And the words didn't match his age. I thought Carl was amazing in that episode, but mostly when he wasn't talking. Totally agree there, too. I like Tony from Colorado. I think these young actors are going to be great one day. I think they are shown great. I think they have great talent because I think they have been more successful when not being pushed to explain things to us. I did like Melissa McBride's performance. She's so good, and I felt her pain. Did you notice that when Lizzie asked her if she misses Sophia and then asked her, "Wouldn't you miss me?" She, Carol, doesn't answer. She just says something like, "Will I have to miss you?" I don't think she liked Lizzie. I think she loved Mika, but she knew she was doomed to have the same fate as Sophia. That's an interesting take.
Yeah, that could be correct. I mean, we saw her like really bonding with Mika, I think, just trying to get her to understand what's going on. Because she cares about her.
Maybe that's the whole ma'am thing, too, because she saw that these girls, like, Lizzie's scary and Mika is not a mean bone in her body. I'm emotionally preparing myself for this guillotine moment.
And the comparisons to Sophia right off the bat. I mean, we know that she cared about Sophia.
Lastly, Tyrese needs to put that baby facing out or up on his shoulders because it's going to be suffocated against his back. It really drives me crazy that they don't have more baby things. Didn't Lori get a baby shower? But they have an endless supply of formula? I took it that that little ass kicker was on his back facing out.
Me too, but...
Now why you wrap... See, and again, I think them wrapping the baby up so tight was another fairly bacon gauntlet ham fist attempt to have us speculate about whether the baby survived or not.
I thought it was totally obvious that the baby survived, but
well, if they want to make it totally, so this is the harsh
show its face, right?
This is the harsh Georgia summer, man. You're gonna wrap a kid up in a blanket?
No, this is the harsh Georgia spring.
Is it spring?
All seasons in
fall?
Georgia are harsh.
Yes,
I think it's spring
really
because
are.
The trees were budding, right?
Were they?
Maybe it's fall. Maybe the leaves are just falling off. I'm honestly not sure at this point.
It seems like people were sweaty as fuck all throughout the prison sequence, and that's not been that long ago.
That's true. That it must be summer going to fall.
They were filming this in the fall, but anyway. That's it. Spoilers.
The sweaty Georgia winter.
So I'm going to talk in the spoiler section about how the Lizzie plot line interfaces with the same story in the comic outline. And this touches on a few other characters. And I don't see how they could go back to this same well, and I don't see how they can take some of these impacts of other characters and rework them, but they might. So it's a very, very mild spoiler, and we're past this point in the comic now. But I'm, you know, so if you guys are brave enough, you can join us in the spoiler section. I'm going to talk about this right up front with my co-host Jim here, and I will tell you to fuck right off when we get to the main spoiler section. But that's kind of what I want to talk about.
Okay, sounds good. Let's do an outro and then let's get to it.
Email. You want to give us some more? We had a lot this week. WatchingDead@baldmove.com. You can join our live threads on Facebook at facebook.com/baldmove. And Jim always holds down Twitter. At twitter@baldmove.com.
Yes, that is all true. And until next week, right after the episode, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
We're back with the spoiler section. You said you had something you were desperate to talk about here.
Okay, so here's the deal. In the main comics, Dale,
okay,
and another woman were raising these two twins that their parents had died.
In the prison? Is that right?
This is either... It might be post-prison. Immediately post-prison. I think it's after they have to disperse because of the prison. So they're on the road, similar to where our characters are. And we've gotten little hints about one of the twins being a little kooky. And at one point, the twin murders the other and knifes him. And you see him at the end. And they said, you know, why are you mad? Because I didn't hurt his brain. He's going to come right back. And they were very small, like 5, 6, 7 years old tops. The strength of this is you can kind of see where kids at that age would get confused. And it was tragic because these kids weren't old enough to know right from wrong. And it was just a sad deal altogether. And there was this instant debate in the camp about what to do with this psycho. Because Dale and the, I forget who he was with. It wasn't Andrea. Maybe it was Andrea. They desperately wanted to, say that they just had one of their adopted son murdered by the other adopted son. And they wanted to save him. And Rick and a lot of the other group were like, I don't know what we can do. We can't, he established this rule that, if you kill the living, then you're condemned for death. That's the bright rule that Rick lives by. Okay. And there's all this debate with the adults, and it was getting intense. And then you hear this gunshot and everybody rushes over, to the van where they've kind of held this kid in the cell, and fucking Carl cowboyed up and shot this kid and said, I did what you adults can't.
Yeah.
Or were refusing to do. I did what needed to be done. And he was only 8 or 9. He was much younger in the series too.
Yeah.
What really pisses me off is that I feel like every fucking time they have a chance to, in a believable way, age Carl mentally and emotionally, Mm-hmm. Carl in the comics shot Shane, a living, breathing Shane, because he was trying to kill his daddy.
Yeah.
They fucking pussed out, and they had him be a zombie. So it wasn't, it's like, you know, his AMC couldn't do it. Here again, another opportunity for Carl to be, do something even the adults couldn't do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's horrific. This isn't me like, oh, it'd have been so cool.
Yeah, no.
But they're
well, obviously, I mean, it's not a baby, so.
They're... they're robbing Carl of these moments. Do you, and, yeah. And why?
So it's you're saying that that degrades his character.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, the fact that he's older and the fact that it's kind of absurd to him for him to have exact same plot lights given to him as far as him being abandoned by his father and worried about his father being dead. And the fact that he's also being denied these other opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think it's because Kirkman is a mad inventor with an erector set that he doesn't understand and he's just taking it together and putting parts and it's just kind of like a Frankenstein monster? Or do you think AMC is like, no, you can't have a kid kill another kid. It's bad enough you're killing a kid. I don't know who's to blame here, but...
I want to say after this episode that it's probably Kirkman rearranging the pieces. Because they didn't show a kid killing a kid, but they did imply it off screen.
Right. But that was like, you know, I'm talking about like a hero character who's going to survive.
Oh, gotcha.
Do you think... Am I crazy or is this a problem? Or is this not a problem?
Well... I think it's certainly a problem if they want to follow roughly the same arc of the comic, because to get to the points with Carl that you need to get to further on, you need to have that development happen, right?
I think so.
It would seem like it to me. He won't be the same Carl that we know in the comics if he hasn't had these experiences. And so if that's what you're looking for, sure. Now, if they're going to take this show in a completely different direction, which they don't seem to be so far, they seem to want to stick to the basic plot, then maybe you wouldn't need those moments for Carl. Maybe he's got some other future destined for him.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's hard to say, given that the show isn't necessarily sticking to the comic.
And I'm not a comic supremacist, but I do think the one thing that they do hit right is Rick and Carl's relationship, and they're just dangerously ranging far afield of what I feel like that core is.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you want to preserve that, you need roughly the same Carl character.
And it's like they already changed enough. They made it two little girls, and there weren't twins, and there was a lot. I mean, the other thing that worked, I think, is that they're, you know, this is just kind of a shocking thing. This wasn't really built up to. It was just something, and they didn't imply that the kid was crazy so much as just that he's a little kid.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the things that can happen to a little kid, and they get confused, and they're... you know, playing with big boy tools and happens. And it's it's kind of like Carol's debate about teaching these kids to kill in a microcosm. I mean, one interesting thing about Carol, and she probably feels guilty about this. I wish I mentioned this in the main cast. She's the one that taught the girls how to use weapons and to kill people.
That's very true. Yeah.
So, and these... were later, this was now used against her living sister. So there's interesting things about the way it happened here. I just assumed that Carl would have this plot and this would be important to his development.
Yeah. No, I think you're right, unless they want to take Carl in a different direction.
I mean, it's arguable that maybe they already did that by having him quote unquote kill Lori. That was his maturing moment.
Hmm. Okay.
Where he did something
I mean,
none of the other people could do. Although that's not true, really.
That may not be true, but in the moment, he certainly had to. And it did, I think, age him. It did mature him. He he became a lot more like Carol than any of the other characters.
Rolling on with Ginny D, double dipping in the spoiler section here. I wonder if this is leading to the affair. What the hell? I edited this badly. Oh, I wonder if this plot line is leading up to the affair that Carol had with Tyrese in the comics. I'm really sorry that it wasn't Carl who put Lizzie down. She agrees with me. I think that it would have been fascinating, but also would have meant a long, drawn-out story with Lizzie still around, and that is one character I can do without. Thank you very much. Yeah, I mean, multiple things would have to be different for them to have pulled this off. But I think it was within their power to do that.
Carol and Tyrese affair? I mean, it's not really an affair at this point. Both of their significant others are dead.
Yeah, and
so they may have a thing, sure.
The only thing is, she's talking about how it ends up in the comics.
Oh, which I don't know. How does that end up?
So Tyrese kind of uses her as a fuck buddy.
Okay.
And she's not really serious. And the comic Carol is a very weak character. She goes from relationship, trying to feel loved and supported by various people. She suggests being in a polygamous marriage with Rick and Lori, and Lori spurns her for that. And several other people. And then when Michonne shows up, Tyrese kind of falls in love with Michonne and spurns her. And they had a walker tied up in the prison that they were doing like experiments on, like observing to try to learn from the enemy, which I don't think they do other than Poindexter enough in this series. And she decided to go and just go kiss the zombie. That this is someone that wanted her, and you know,
wow.
And she's she kills herself by zombie.
Mm-hmm.
This Carol is way too strong to do something like that.
And
that's a positive improvement, I think, on the character.
Sure.
So I can't. I mean, maybe it would be the stupidest thing they've ever done, but it would be feel like a very blatant betrayal of the character at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Vince R said, "Here's a theory that's been turning over in my mind. I'm thinking that Daryl's going to assume the role that Dwight plays in the comics, the mole inside the enemy camp that gives Rick's band the insider info needed to mount the attack against Negan. Although, ooh, so he's in the camp that Negan's going to be appearing at the end of the episode, or maybe we've already met him.
Okay.
Although Dwight killed Abraham with a crossbow bolt, I'm not basing my theory on the bowman skills that Dwight and Daryl have in common. The idea first came to me 2 episodes ago when Beth and Daryl were having their heart-to-heart in a moonshiner's shack. Daryl admits that he needs a leader, good or bad, to follow, and Beth tells him that he will miss her when she is gone. Before seeing the alone ep, I thought that Beth would have be killed, and Daryl, in his grief and despair, would fall in with the next strongman that he happened to meet. After terrorizing the countryside with his new pals, Daryl would regain the good side after the baddies mount an attack on Rick and eventually help Rick defeat the enemy. I think that alone followed that basic outline. Beth gone and Daryl joining the baddies, but Daryl's motivation is not grief. Regarding Joe's band, I don't think that they will turn out to be the Hunters or Negan's band. The Hunters are masters of stealth and camouflage, and Negan's guys are quite disciplined, if only out of fear of their leader. I think the producers know that they will never be able to portray the horror of cannibalism or the eventual slaughter of the Hunters by the good guys. Similarly, the brutality and sadism of Negan, not to mention his language, would be impossible to bring whole cloth to AMC. I think that Joel's band is going to be a sanitized amalgam of the bad guys to Rick's bands that Rick bands fight on the road to Alexandria and in the defense of Alexandria. The adaptation will not be a bad thing if Daryl's journey to the dark side. Daryl's journey to the dark side and back, and reunion with Rick's crew are handled properly." That is a lot of really cool theories. Some I vigorously agree with, and some I'm not so sure about. It's my position that we need the Hunter storyline to bring Rick's group from the confident band that repelled the governor's attack, although at the loss of their prison, to the confident, tough, badass band that feels like they can take on all comers. And that overconfidence then gets exploited by an evil character that's just as organized as Rick and just as ruthless as Rick in his own way too. But you're right. AMC cannot film Negan as he's written in the comics. Negan's
I haven't read that
favorite
part.
Word is fuck. And his second favorite word is motherfucker. And his third favorite word is cunt. So that's not going to fly on basic cable.
Yeah, probably not. Probably not. They've used up all their birds, so.
Now, interesting enough, AMC apparently, his favorite word was the N word or the other F bomb, that'd been fine.
Because would it? Why?
Because they've said those words unbleeped multiple times in this series. So that's weird culturally with this country, but I was just making a little commentary there. I do like the parallels between Daryl and Dwight, though.
Especially as it relates to Beth.
especially as it relates to Beth. But again, I'm not ready to give up the dream of the Hunters. And the fact that we've got so little left in this episode, I almost think that maybe the Hunters are going to be the big bads. And sure. that they're are going to be distinct from Joe's group. They're going to be another group. They're maybe the group that abducted. I don't know, man. There's so many different things this way this could go.
And only two more episodes.
So we've already blown away where we thought we'd be when we looked at, you know, the episode titles and the synopsis and all that. So Tony from Colorado, another double dipper, said, love the comic book version of the storyline better. Billy and Ben were hardly given a notice other than as poor orphans and who will look after them. It wasn't until Ben dissects a cat that you even know that something's wrong with them. They're younger in the comic, I think, which makes them all the more horrific. It's hard to write for kids. In the comic, they don't say much, which helps. Agreed. And what little they do say is with a fairly flat effect. So,
perfect. Get Mika in there.
Yeah, Mika would have been.
She worked out. I thought she was fine.
But if Mika was, and another sister about her age or maybe another year younger.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Some of this might be AMC just be like, we can't kill a 7-year-old. We can't have a 7-year-old kill another 7-year-old and then have a 9-year-old kill them. No fucking way, you sickos.
What kind of show are we making?
Tara said, you mentioned an instant cast that they would have had been a whole other level to have Carol and Tyrese lead the baby behind. But Carol specifically said that she can't have Lizzie under the same roof as Judith. Her main motivation for killing Lizzie was to keep Judith safe. It would not have made sense if they abandoned her after killing Lizzie. That said, I wish Carol and Tyrese hadn't gotten back to the girls until Judith was dead, too. I want that zombie baby. I think another way they could have gone was to keep Lizzie alive without a knife or other weapon to make it to Terminus and meet up with Rick and Carl and Michonne and then have Lizzie kill the baby and have Carl, maybe Rick too, find them and take out Lizzie comic book style.
Hmm.
I don't know why.
Like them going back to that well, right? Like the kids killing kids sort of thing or what?
If they'd gone this, it wouldn't have gone back to the well because it wouldn't happen
That's true, yeah. But Carol wouldn't have killed the kid.
To me, I don't think they can go back to the... I don't know. They're going to, though. They're going to continue to put Judith in danger until they end up killing her.
Yeah, I just hope the next time they either make it final and give me my zombie baby, or they just don't do it again. That'd be nice.
That's all we got.
All right. Sounds good. Well, it's been a long cast, so...
All right.
I think we should call it here. Say that we'll see everybody next week after the episode. Until then, I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron. See ya.